Civilization, where unknown forces strike the edge of ecology.
In last week's Boston bombings episode, we did a bit of a reaction piece, really, to the news that broke this time last week, pretty much to the hour, that there had been a series of bombings in Boston during the marathon. And at the time, we didn't know, nobody knew whether or not it was a terrorist attack or it was just some sort of gas explosion. And for the first hour or so of the news story, people were still unsure of what was going on. And I think there were even people on Sky News speculating it was most likely just, you know, a gas explosion, like I say. But obviously it's been a really crazy week in the news as a result of this. And lots really happened that I don't think we could have really predicted. It was unfathomable, really, some of the stuff. Like pretty much a martial law lockdown of an entire city, and all this business that's sort of dominated the news with regards to sustained gunfights in urban environments and all this sort of thing. So I've been keeping a close eye on it, and so has Peter. And really, this is just a bit of a follow up because we now have some more information, and all the theories about what may or may not have happened have started to hit, and some of them are very interesting. But I think, really, yeah, just to sort of recap then, I mean, Peter, you remember last week, it was quite an amazing sort of news story to sort of watch unfold. It was very reminiscent of 9/11, I thought.
Yes, and 7/7 as well.
Yeah.
Comparison's been made quite a lot this week. All happening in a week, and there's different events going on and on different days, and you try and put a shape to it afterwards, really.
You do.
While it's actually happening. We were obviously talking the night this actually occurred, but after that we had various incidents. I'm trying to think how it happened the next day. We were talking, because there's always this time lag you have to take into account. So if we talk about in the evening, it's always confusing, because of course we're 5 hours ahead of Boston.
Yeah.
But just to recap very briefly what happened on the night in terms of what we witnessed, just to maybe give it a minute's revision, just to catch us up there.
Yeah.
Well, you rang me, didn't you, and you said you'd heard something.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, we kind of have said over the years, I mean, we've been doing this podcast for a few years now, and we're always keeping an eye on the news. And I think one of the things that we have always said is that if an event triggers, if something suddenly hits the news, we want to respond to it very quickly and pretty much just chronicle everything that's going on in a sort of journalistic way. And we, as soon as the news hit, and it was around 8 o'clock UK time in the evening, pretty much the first thing I did was pick up the phone and call yourself, Peter.
Yeah.
And you heard on the news that something had also occurred, and it was pretty much just action stations.
In fact, you were the first I heard of it.
Right, because
then put the radio,
you put the radio
live
straight on. Yeah.
I was listening to that, and yeah, you were listening to, I think, Alex Jones or something.
That's right. And then I had Alex Jones on, and the news broke, and Alex Jones had heard about it, so I got Alex Jones's live reaction, which was quite interesting. But as the story played out, I mean, I guess one of the first points that I kind of want to make in terms of looking back at the last week was, it really did strike me as a prime example of how the mainstream media is becoming slightly less relevant, really, nowadays, because pretty much all the information that I got came from alternative sources. And I'm not just talking here about possible conspiracy theories relating to it. I'm talking about actual facts on the ground that are the sort of thing that the journalists are meant to be telling you about. So, for example, I mean, it was really the first time where a police scanning radio, I think, had played such a vital part in a story breaking out. Because unlike in the UK, and I guess most of our American listeners will know this anyway, but in the US, police are still transmitting on analog radio signals. So for that reason, people can tune into police radio frequencies using scanning radios. And that was something that I actually did used to do in the UK up until sort of like the late 90s. And then everything went digital in this country. But what was interesting about that was that people were listening to this happen like it was playing out like a film, like a movie script, because they were talking at length on the police radio on the Boston frequencies.
Was that on the Monday?
On the Monday. Yeah. And as soon as this story hit, people were straight on the scanning radios.
Okay.
there's a website called Ustream, which is becoming a very popular website now. It's gaining a lot of attention because what it allows people to do is essentially stream audio like it's a radio station, but using the internet. Oh, so somebody had a scanning radio and they just had it on 24/7 Ustream. So it was just broadcasting to thousands of people who were tuning into this channel. And it was just unedited, just streaming police radio. So it's just a fascinating development, that. And it's the first time, certainly from my perspective, that I've ever encountered something like that happening. But having so many people tap into it online, or various conspiracy forums and that, people were straight on there. And they were finding out information that the mainstream media didn't know about hours, you know, for hours, you know, later. I mean, a prime example is with the sort of, during the gunfight, alleged gunfight, but I guess we'll get to that later. But there was all sorts of information that was coming through on the scanning radio regarding...
Well, can we just take us through to what happened on Monday when we left off? Because I'm just trying to remember where we got to on Monday. Obviously, the bombs happened. There were guys... There were various photographs, I think, being produced at that time.
Yeah.
Just trying to think, where did we leave off on Monday?
Well, we left off really at the point where we'd just had I think it was a live press conference with the mayor or the chief of police. Yeah. And they confirmed that it was an ongoing incident. There was all sorts of talk of there being multiple devices, including a device at JFK Library. And they were concerned about the idea of there being further attacks, pretty much. And I think as soon as that became sort of like a confirmed response from the authorities in Boston, I got on the phone to you, and then that was the point at which you came onto the episode last week, because I thought that felt very much like an escalation that kind of registered it as something more than a horrific, you know, attack.
When we ended on Monday, when you sort of went off the air or whatever.
Yeah.
At what point was it then, and what happened on Tuesday? Because I know Wednesday there was a big incident, not directly related, and we know what happened later in the week. I'm just trying to follow it through. Did things go a bit quiet on Tuesday?
I think they did, really. I mean, they confirmed that there were... I think there was all this speculation about there being more bombs, and as the night panned out, I think the realisation was that perhaps they were not bombs, they were false alarms. So the JFK one, for example, they backed down on that. And basically there was a lot of backing down going on. So about 3 hours into it, they were just backing down on all sorts of claims that were being made. And then it pretty much, I think people pretty much felt like that was the end of it at that point. So it was pretty much, I mean, it would have been a dramatic night of news and information and all this stuff kicking in. But I think there was just a sense that that was it, you know. There was no immediate sort of... I think the big sort of surprise everyone had that night was the fact that there was no announcement from any particular group that they were responsible, which is very unlikely.
Yeah, so it's a question of hunting down whoever did it.
Yeah.
And, well, let's brush over Tuesday a little. I think on Tuesday I'd probably download an Alex Jones and listen to that. Wednesday, there was this big explosion in Texas, wasn't there?
Yeah, and that was very interesting. I mean, I think, again, when that news hit, everybody jumped at that thinking it was some sort of, perhaps, some follow-up terrorist attack, and perhaps there was some greater conspiracy going on here, sort of an organised group. But the media were very fast to respond to that and just to say it was an accident and that was it. But, I mean, in isolation, that story alone was just, you know, hugely dramatic, because that... Apparently that explosion could be heard 45 miles away, and it was like a pretty much like a mini nuclear explosion.
Was it on Thursday? I'm probably getting mixed up with Margaret Thatcher's funeral.
I think that was on the Wednesday. Yeah.
I think it was on Thursday.
I think that was a Wednesday.
And it was almost, because it was quite near Alex Jones's base, so I was almost wondering for a minute if they'd given him a warning or something.
Yeah, right.
Talking about something similar.
I suspect he
may have done. The show that I downloaded, which was probably the Wednesday show, thinking about it now, or the Tuesday one, which I got on Wednesday, is all a bit confusing. But he was talking there about sometimes they blow things up and, you know, they pretend it's an accident and this sort of thing. Who knows? It could well have been an accident. But it was kind of synchronously weird anyway that it was near near Alex Jones or in Texas anyway. And there's one person who was present at both by chance, wasn't there?
Yeah.
They heard on the news.
I didn't hear about that.
They were running in the marathon. They missed the explosion by about 30 seconds. And they got out of Boston and went down to Texas for some reason. Maybe they're from there, I don't know. And they were driving past that fertilizer plant when it blew up, and some of it even hit their car.
Well,
it's quite a week for them.
Yeah, that's quite incredible. And then
we had that funny business about the Family Guy episode that.
Oh yeah.
Again, midweek, I was looking into a bit the episode that seemed to prefigure the Boston bombings.
Yeah, and then the Seth MacFarlane was very quick to jump in there and say that. It was just a complete coincidence. There was no story there. But it was very bizarre. Very bizarre, that information.
Well, he certainly wouldn't come on and say, yeah, I knew about it.
I mean,
I'm not saying he's wrong.
But that reminds me of 9/11. There was a very interesting Simpsons episode where there was a shot of a plane hitting the World Trade Center and a poster saying 9/11. And that was in an episode of The Simpsons a couple of weeks before. I think it was a couple of weeks, perhaps a couple of months before.
It reminds me a bit of the guy we were listening to the other day about the music, Mark Devlin.
Yeah.
The sort of imagery in pop culture indicating the agenda.
Yeah.
And how
absolutely.
They would convey that to someone to put into a cartoon.
Yeah.
How would you suggest it to someone?
That's
put
right.
Put it in there and make it seem innocuous to the animator, but still that they've got to do it a certain way.
Yeah, and I guess that might be a good time to mention a point that you made, Peter, regarding we spoke offline about this, and I thought it was quite an interesting point. But regarding some films that have been released, just happened to have been released this week, and although they're not directly, you know, predicting that there were going to be bombings, it's just some odd symbolism there that I think ties in with this. Because the thing about movies is you get all the promotional material for the movie, so you get big posters on the side of buses in urban city environments, and there's always like these tag words and taglines to promote the film. And it's, I mean, I think the one with Gerard Butler that's just been released is called Olympus or something like that. I can't remember the name.
Olympus has fallen.
Yeah.
One
of the lines used in that film is like, "Terror has struck the heart of the US or something like that." And it's just funny that you get that on billboards and on movie posters all over, you know, public areas.
Yeah.
When something like this happens.
Yeah. Well, it happened at 7/7 on the bus. It happened
somewhere
like Outright Terror, Bold and Brilliant.
Yeah.
On the bus.
And it
blew up, and there's a photo of it with it written on the side.
Yeah, I remember that, and it does.
That was some film that came out, I guess, in 2005, whatever it was. But just having it on there, strangely synchronous, you know.
It is very, very, and then. It does make me wonder sometimes if, even on a subconscious level, perhaps this stuff happens almost because of the fractal nature of reality.
Mm.
I mean, perhaps even if you don't quite go as far as to say that it's all, you know, a conspiracy and this is all planned by people that are in control of these systems and these, you know, these timelines, it could just be a very odd example of how the universe works and it's sort of odd. Sort of in a kind of Michael Talbot holographic universe sense of the word, you know, which is an interesting angle on this kind of thing.
Yeah, but of course there's another film about the White House later on in the year coming out.
White House Down, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's
right. So, I mean, this new one they've just brought out, it could have been a Die Hard movie. Perhaps it should have been, judging by the quality of Die Hard 5. But, so we perhaps haven't seen this film, so can't really say too much about it, but it's probably a little jingoistic in some ways. But certainly the imagery of the poster, look at the poster, the White House with this rather badly done CGI fire stuck on it.
Yeah.
Even the stone banisters are burning in some way, which is a bit strange.
Very much, yeah.
It's kind of just done as for effect, really, you know. Maybe a good film, but certainly... when you see the publicity around in the same week without even seeing the film, you don't even need to see the film. You've just got the image of a White House burning and you've got bombs going off in Boston at the same time, so it kind of reinforces it in some way.
Yeah.
And you remember it, link the two together a little bit.
So we had that, and then then came the sort of crescendo, really, I guess, of all this stuff, which was the dramatic gunfight and subsequent lockdown of the city of Boston, and then the secondary follow-up standoff, which led to the capture of one of the suspects. So this was a very interesting, for me, this is the most fascinating part of the whole story.
And just clarify when that was.
Well, this would have been Thursday, early Friday morning. So we're talking, you know, the early hours of Friday morning.
Whose time?
US time. So we're talking about 3 a.m. Boston time. And right. It very, you know, early in the morning in the UK, about 8 in the morning,
okay,
when this was sort of kicking, information was starting to sort of filter through, very early in the morning. I mean, I remember I had a notification on my phone, Sky News app, and it said that something was kicking off, a gunfight. So I got up at about 7:30, which is the time I usually get up anyway, but I was, you know, straight on seeing what was going on. But this is the big unanswered question, and even, you know, we're a few days on since that now, but still really the details are just so slippery, and no one has really been able to come out and say for sure what exactly did take place. I mean, the official story is just bizarre, and it continuously changes. It's like it's just like a chameleon of a story, really, and I don't think they're ever going to nail it. I think the plan is to just confuse everybody until we just accept a certain, you know, general series of events and don't really question any deeper than that. But I guess it's worth just giving a very quick overview of what the official line is on this. The suspects were identified via CCTV footage, and as a result, somebody phones the police, and because they put these pictures out to everybody to sort of say, do you know these people, etc., call us. Somebody thought that they identified them in a car, and they just happened to be parked up outside a 7-Eleven that was being raided by an armed gang. They just happened to be in the area. So not only were the police responding to the armed 7-Eleven raid, but they were responding to this sighting of these two guys in a car. So a huge amount of police turned up. They were confronted by the two suspects in the car, who opened fire on them immediately with automatic weapons. And not only that, but they seemed to have a car filled to the brim with hand grenades and ready to roll pressure cooker bombs.
So the 7-Eleven thing has nothing to do with them, as just a chance.
Well, it is, yeah, but it's very strange. And the first, I mean, one of the stories that came out was that actually they were attempting to raid a 7-Eleven, and that's why they were caught. But that was very quickly kind of altered, and it may have just been a mistake by the media that was, you know, reported at all. But the thing that I find odd is this whole, all the detail surrounding the gunfight. I mean, this has been Alex Jones's angle all day. I mean, I've just been listening to Alex Jones today, and I only recently, about an hour ago, he was talking about this very detail, which is just that this whole gunfight just doesn't make any sense, because for a start, people were claiming that hand grenades were being thrown. You can't get hold of hand grenades. You can't just buy them. They're a particularly difficult thing to get hold of. And, I mean, in the US, it's obviously far easier than it is in Europe to buy weaponry, i.e. firearms. But it's, hand grenades, it's a military thing. You know, civilians don't buy or own hand grenades. So that's suspicious in and of itself, I think. And it suggests to me that they If it's even remotely true that they had hand grenades, it suggests to me that it wasn't them at all. It was perhaps some other element to this story that's not being revealed. But they're claiming that there was a gunfight. There really is no evidence at all that they were even armed. And all the sound of the gunfights, because it's only sound, there's no video footage of any of these gunfights that allegedly went down in Boston. It sounds like one-way fire. It just sounds like police firing. And that's the point that Alex Jones made today. He just stressed that it just sounded like a one-way gunfight. So in other words, it wasn't a gunfight. It was just the police shooting at a car. So that's interesting. And I've not heard anyone really talk about that in any great detail. They've all just maintaining the official line that there was a sustained gunfight. So Obviously, the question is then why? How come an MIT officer was killed, and how come various police officers were wounded? That's a very good question, but I think we need to slightly backtrack on ourselves here to perhaps raise the possibility of there being a third party involved here. So, one of the theories, and you're aware of this as well, Peter, is that during the bombing, during the marathon day, which was on the Monday, there are all sorts of unidentified individuals who looked like they were military contractors or mercenaries. And the telltale sign is always that they basically are looking, they look like they're in the military for a start. So they've got the regulation haircut, etc. They've got the physique, they've just got the look, as Alex Jones describes. But they're also wearing the same camo pattern pants, military boots. They've got the radio piece on, the kind of, you know, the kind of uniform, without it being a sort of official military uniform, it just has that look about it. And the real telltale sign was one of them was wearing a cap with a skull on, and it turns out to be the actual symbol of a mercenary outfit called Craft International. So we looked into these guys a bit, like everyone did who found out about this. And these guys were sort of, you know, international mercenary outfit that are all over the scene. They're ex-military, ex-spec ops, SEALs, you name it. Not just in the US, we're talking all over the world here. And they're all over Iraq, Afghanistan, just doing contract work. They're just mercenaries for hire, you know, guns for hire, as they say. So what, you know, what business do people like that have being, you know, on the scene during the marathon, just in, you know, in large numbers? Doesn't really make any sense to me. Even if you accept a mainstream story here, why would you have a mercenary outfit being, you know, at all involved in the security of a public event like that? Surely the US authorities would be more, you know, would be more keen to use, you know, actual military guys they've got on the payroll, you know, not these guys that are earning thousands of dollars just to sort of be standing around all day.
Well, they wouldn't want to deploy full-on military-looking guys with actual army clothes, would they? Because they're actually sort of undercover, aren't they? Or what are they doing there undercover?
Well, it just strikes me as odd.
Involved with the bomb drill or checking to see if there was a bomb, thinking there was one? Was that some possibility?
Well, you see, this is the thing. So the plot gets deeper here then. So we're now entering into this theory that there were bomb drills. So one of the unanswered questions about the day is that apparently the runners were being told that there was a bomb squad drill taking place during the marathon. So this is where it gets very suspicious, because that's exactly what they were saying happened during 7-7. And it's pretty much the sign of a false flag event. And that's there's so much evidence now that backs up the theory that's pretty much the modus operandi of a false flag event. It's sort of in the manual, that, you know, that if you do a 101 course on how to create a false flag terrorist event, so you know, so you can blame your enemies and advance your own agenda in a David Icke style problem reaction solution sort of scenario, then you create a false flag. And the way you do that is you create a drill scenario. So you get your people in, but under the guise of a drill. So they can do what they want to do, but without alerting suspicion, because everyone just assumes it's part of a bigger drill. But then during the confusion of that, you have actual operatives going in and then planting real bombs and then getting out. And that's one theory about what happened during 7-7. And it looks to me pretty much like that could well be exactly what happened during the Boston bombings.
Okay, we jumped a bit there backwards, because we were talking about the gunfight and there being a third party involved. So you're saying one of those Craft guys.
That's right. So
would have been at the gunfight.
Yeah, that's right. So
firing back.
It's one theory about what could have occurred, because one of the things that Alex Jones said, and I think he's quite on the ball with a lot of this stuff a lot of the time, is that perhaps that whole exercise in Boston of locking down the city was part of a bigger effort, which was to pretty much just locate some sort of element of that, perhaps that mercenary outfit Craft, who had, you know, possibly gone rogue, who had possibly kind of, you know, decided that they didn't want to be a part of the operation, or perhaps they wanted to reveal some information. No one knows, and they will ever know, but. No, there's one theory about this, which is that there was actually a gunfight going on, but it wasn't between these two suspects on, you know, the mainstream media are talking about. It was between elements of this this mercenary outfit and the police. But that's speculative, you know. It's just not, it's not something that there's any real evidence for. But it's just, to me, that the gunfight story doesn't hold any kind of ground. It doesn't seem to make any sense at all to me that was what panned out. And then if we then take it ever so slightly further, so we had a day of police lockdown in Boston, where one of the theories that Alex Jones has and various other people is that all that really was an exercise in seeing how the American population would react to essentially martial law, because that's pretty much what it was.
Yeah, I mean, it's a scenario that was seen in Terror Storm film, for example, when the helicopter's flying over the city and that sort of stuff. It looks like they've actually gone and done it
in
a large open area on this occasion.
That's right, and I mean, America perhaps failed a test with that, because how would the police react if people were said, you know, no, you can't come into my house, you know, what's your grounds, you know? But instead, entire blocks of residential areas, they were just welcoming them, you know, allowing them to come into their private property and do full searches of the entire property. And there was no real grounds for it, except to say, well, there's a lone guy in the city, and he's a bomber, and, you know, give me all your rights and let me come into your house and search everywhere. And it seemed to be, one argument could be that this whole piece was just an experiment to see how a large swathe of the population would react to that sort of scenario, where pretty much the authorities are saying, look, here, you know, we want control of every part of your life. We want to be setting up checkpoints everywhere. We want to be coming into your private property and sort of looking at everything you own. And that's that kind of thing, you know?
Yeah, and it builds the narrative up, keeps the story going a bit, gives them a bit of time to work out what the next move is, and shows them being very efficient at doing the job and tracking them down, which maybe they did to some degree. But, I mean, one of the brothers was killed, wasn't he?
Yeah, and that's right, and that's a very strange bit of, very suspicious bit of information about that. I mean, so the I mean, from what I can tell, and like I say earlier, the information is so sketchy that it's difficult to really find a kind of particular line of events here. But so they were in this sustained gunfight. They were in a car chase with the police, where allegedly they had to bail out of one car and hijack another car at gunpoint. There's one story where they did that up to three or four times, but I think that's not really been discussed since. So I think, let's say they you know, hijacked an armed, you know, a Grand Theft Auto on a particular car. So they took a second car. They were shooting the police in the second car, throwing hand grenades out the window, etc. It's all very kind of cinematic. But then they managed to, for whatever reason, they stopped. Perhaps it's because the car was out of order. And the older suspect, who is now dead, he was the guy who was killed. He allegedly suddenly decided that it would be a good idea to just run at the police head on. So even though they survived this gunfight for up to 2-3 hours, it was almost as if it clicked in his head that he wanted to go down and, you know, be a martyr or something. He ran at the police, was shot. But then the police decided that they were going to charge at him and try and handcuff him. Well, as soon as they handcuffed him, the younger suspect got in an SUV and drove over the body of his brother, and that's what killed him. And then he drove off and left the scene. So that's...
Yeah, do you think then his brother had already said to him, look, I'm going to go down in a blaze of glory, I'm going to die here?
I suppose it's possible. I mean, I think...
He was just finishing it off.
Like, perhaps allow him to get away or something. I just don't know. I mean, it's just a very odd story. But again, all of this apparently did... I mean, I didn't hear this on the police scanner, because this was way too early in the morning UK time to be listening. But this did all apparently unfold on police radio, and everyone online was listening to this on various forums. There were long lists of posts about this. And the details even then were sketchy, because the police were describing all sorts of things that have never, not once have they been reported on since by the mainstream media. They've just been utterly covered up. So, for example, there was lots of talk on the night on police radio of some third car involved, an SUV turning up, with guys shooting out the windows and things. But that was just completely, just not discussed since. And I'm guessing it's because perhaps a lot of the time when police are on police radio and things are going down, at the end of the day, we're all human. So sometimes you are going to get things mixed up and you're going to describe things that aren't actually true, or they can actually be explained. I mean, perhaps that particular SUV was the suspects in question, but it's just the details sometimes are a little bit blurry with this stuff. But then I guess if we then look at the final day of this, which was the Friday, so after this whole day of trying to find this guy, they couldn't do it. And it then turned out that somebody had missed, well, the official story is that he was hiding in a boat. And that does, it does appear to be what happened. He was hiding in a boat, and he was obviously been hiding in this particular spot all day, and the police somehow missed it. Now, this is where it gets a bit odd as well, because now I did tune into the police scanner during this, because this was quite a reasonable time in the UK. And what seemed to pan out at the time was slightly different to what we're now being told by the mainstream media, and this is quite interesting, because the police converged on this boat, and within about 5 minutes, somebody online had found where the boat was on Google Earth, posted it on all these forums. So everyone had Google Maps on the forums, Google Street View. So everyone had every conceivable angle of this boat before the mainstream media had even cottoned onto the fact that the terrorist had been found. And that's the speed of the internet and the speed of all these alternative forums and that nowadays. The mainstream media was about 2 hours behind what was happening. And it was fascinating to watch it pan out like that. It felt like you were right at the pulse of events. But so the guy was hiding in a boat, and there was a tape that apparently somebody revealed to the police on a mobile phone video, or the audio of a mobile phone video, and it was the sound of a gunfight. So the first responders to this report of him hiding in a boat turned up, and they were immediately engaged by the guy in the boat with allegedly an assault rifle. So what appeared to then happen was more police turned up, SWAT teams, etc., FBI, they all converged on the boat. They then threw probably up to 8 flashbangs at the boat, and a flashbang is like a stun grenade, so it's not lethal, but the idea is they're going to get up close and try and stun him. And he seemed to back down, basically, so he didn't once fire back at the police after that point. But they then opened up on the boat, and there's bullet holes all over the boat. But the police are now saying that they never did that. They're saying that they fired rubber bullets at the boat. But rubber bullets apparently wouldn't make that kind of damage. And this is the stuff I heard on Alex Jones, so I'm not an expert in their ballistics, so it's difficult to know for sure if that's true or not. But I think what we then sort of see is a slightly odd scenario, because the police were saying that one theory is that he shot himself in the mouth, and then the police got to the boat, and he wasn't defending himself. He was just by that point he was pretty much unconscious, and they got him out of the boat, and that's where we are now with events, pretty much, because he's in hospital and he's unable to speak. But there's a shot of him climbing out of the boat, a photograph which the Daily Mail covered. The mainstream media were very quick to respond to that, and they said, no, it's a shot of him getting in the boat. So it's actually a shot of the CCTV footage filming him climbing into the boat. If you want to believe the official line, then that's the official line, but people are reporting that, no, that couldn't have possibly been the case, because the CCTV cameras would have been angled at an extremely bizarre angle, basically. But I don't know. But I think what I'm saying is there seems to be two accounts here. One account is that he was shot and he was in the boat. Another account is that he gave himself up, climbed out of the boat, didn't seem particularly wounded, but then something happened and he was shot. So in other words, perhaps they wanted to hush him up or something, and it wasn't a self-inflicted gunshot wound. But I don't think we're going to know either way, like all these things, because it's already the operations in progress to kind of hush up what could have possibly happened.
Yeah. And apparently it's writing answers down to question me.
Yeah. And he's now being officially charged, I think, as well. That happened about an hour ago.
Right.
But...
Well, yeah, it's quite a saga.
It is. It's quite fascinating. And I guess the mother is quite an interesting side to this as well, the story that the mother had. So the mother's been, she was interviewed on Russia Today, and she's come out saying that the FBI were in direct contact with these two suspects for years, and they knew everything about them, that they knew their links, they knew all sorts about them. So it all seems to now be pointing to the fact that the authorities all knew very well that these two guys, you know, were involved in perhaps some sort of plot, or at least they were controlled by the FBI, but there seems to be some sort of link there with the FBI, so that's quite interesting.
Yeah, these pressure cooker bombs, they're quite big, aren't they?
Yeah, they appear to be pretty big. I mean, the analysis has not really been done. I mean, that's sort of one of the things, like usually on the news you kind of always get some sort of breakdown of the device, but there really has been nothing like that at all. It is sort of still quite mysterious.
Yeah, not sort of thing you'd want to carry around in a backpack.
No, it's not.
You know, looking a bit suspicious, it'd be quite a big idea if it would go in a backpack, even. Hard to say. They'd probably vary in size, pressure cookers, but I think they're quite big things.
Yeah, you know, it is.
It's bigger than a kettle, isn't it? Quite a lot larger.
Oh, it is, yeah. I mean,
more like a litre bin or something like that.
Yeah.
And they're quite heavy, I should think, as well. What are you going to power it with? Maybe you've got a battery on the side, that's another bit of something that you've got to have plugged in. You know, so, you know, it's a lot to rig up quietly in on the day. It's the sort of thing you'd want to put there the week before, you know, and have a timer on it or something.
Yeah.
You know, why would you want to do it on the day when it's a crowd there, you know, very, very difficult to place it, I should think.
Oh, it is. I can imagine. I mean,
they then go after them. I mean, they would just get out of the area, wouldn't they? And this whole 7-Eleven incident seems to be where the trail picked up, but there's no real reason for them to be hanging around there particularly.
Yeah, and also that these reports that one of them was out partying on the Thursday night, it just doesn't make any sense at all. So they've just been involved in a major terrorist attack. And they've got to be intelligent enough to know that eventually their face is going to be picked up on CCTV footage. But all of a sudden they decide to just, well, one of them decides to go out and have a party and just act in a really cavalier-like way, make no effort to sort of go low, lay low. I think that's probably the most bizarre part of this whole story, is the way that these alleged suspects reacted to the events after the bombing. So in other words, what they then immediately decided to do. And the official line, if you like, is just simply that they were kind of pretty naive, and that they genuinely thought they were just going to get away with it and then they would be able to carry on like nothing had happened. But I'm not so convinced. That doesn't really wash with me. I think there seems to be more to this, and I think I have this feeling in my head, and this is something I mentioned to you offline, Peter, a couple of nights back, that my gut feeling on this, and I think Galax Jones is probably sort of saying something along the same lines at the moment, is that they were probably involved in some sort of drill, and they were part of that drill operation, and they had links with the FBI, and perhaps the FBI was sort of telling them that they were going to be used in this sort of advisory type way to sort of be a part of some kind of drill. They were used. They then subsequently then realised a couple of days later that they were going to be framed, and that's why they resisted arrest, perhaps. And that's why they kind of decided they weren't just going to go down lightly. But it's a bold kind of claim, I know, and but I just think it needs to be thrown out there as a possible theory at least. But I mean, there's also this idea that the actual bombings themselves were done but you know, by this craft organisation. So that's sort of their backpacks don't resemble the backpacks that apparently the FBI have started to sort of reveal images of. So there's just too many unanswered questions. It's just, we're not really getting answers being fed through to us. And I think that the media are just hoping that, people just accept the official line and that's it.
Yeah.
And yeah, you know, it's always a danger
really
of that.
Plenty of answers to the questions. Nobody's writing down.
Yeah.
What he says, whether we'll hear them or not.
Well, that would be very interesting. I mean, I guess this story is still ongoing because the suspect is alive, and you know, whether or not we find out any more is just, it's going to be interesting to know if that happens or not.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, I guess how they behave depends on if they did it or not. You know, in a sense, two versions of reality, and if they didn't do it, they were just involved in the drill, they may have just been unsure how to react to then deciding, well, we better get out of here.
Yeah.
If they had done it, if they're acting a bit more strangely, if anything, because yes, you'd expect them to really get out of here, you know. Because they would have planned it, they would have known to just set it off and go, wouldn't they? They would have predetermined it all. They're more likely to be confused if they didn't do it.
Yeah.
Not knowing what to do. You know, it's because it's an unexpected turnout.
That's right. And then there's also that interesting picture of one of these alleged contractor types with a radiation device, a radiation detector, and somebody did some quite good analysis on this, and that's it looks pretty clear that that's what the guy's holding in this shot.
Yeah.
And this was immediately after the explosion, or the both explosions. So he's holding this radiation device, studying it like really in a really serious way, like you're looking really kind of, you know, dour, and you know, and it's just sort of like, well, why is he doing that? And it's sort of, to me, the first reaction I had to that was they were expecting something bigger to go down than what actually did go down, and perhaps that's part of what this plot is that they were, perhaps something didn't quite work, that, you know, in terms of perhaps there was a second, a third bomb or something that was meant to go off and was meant to be a bit more of a dirty type biological bomb. And it didn't quite. It's for whatever reason, it just malfunctioned, perhaps.
I don't know. Cause if that was true, why would the craft guys be standing around there? They wouldn't want to be near it, would they?
Well, yeah, I know what you mean. It just struck me as odd that the guy's holding a radiation detector, and I just think that it's some intelligence-driven sort of presence that these guys are there, these contractors. Then, what intelligence are they briefing that on? You know, are they working? What assumption are they working off? In other words, why are they going and walking around the city with that sort of equipment?
Well, yeah, I mean, if we take them at face value, they may just have had all that gear anyway, because they may just have thought, well, I mean, it does seem odd that there'd be that level of security there for a marathon end line. There's no particular reason for it to be a target for anything. No particular reason at all. So it sounds like they either were doing a drill or they knew something might happen. You may have had that standard equipment possibly anyway. You may have just been checking it. You may have thought there was depleted uranium around, because that wouldn't be a nuclear device, but that would be shrapnel possibly. It's used in that way. It's very hard. Armour-piercing bullets are made out of it. So maybe he was checking for that. Maybe it's just a standard thing you do when there's an explosion. You check every sort of thing it could be, you know.
Yeah, well, that would make sense. That would definitely make sense, I think. This is probably part of a routine. But I just do think their presence is suspicious, just the fact they're there in the first place. That's one of the big unanswered
just
questions.
Doesn't fit the profile of the event.
No, it doesn't at all.
And they would be there, you know. I mean, we just had the EDL march yesterday in Brighton, the English Defence League, and there were police there, obviously, preventing trouble, ha-ha. But they didn't have the army there with rifles and stuff and a helicopter. You know, they had police and some horses, what you'd expect to see, a thing like that.
Yeah.
And you have the appropriate expected level of security. If something big happens, of course, you call in something bigger, but even in America, you don't start with Kraft International mercenary soldiers there at a marathon, you know.
No, absolutely not.
In Boston, which is quite a liberal kind of East Coast place, it's not a kind of gun-toting wouldn't expect things like, well, so you wouldn't expect things like that to happen. They can happen anywhere. They've happened in London, of course, so there's no reason to think it would happen there.
No.
Anything. And if I were the bombing anyway, a rifle isn't much good anyway. It's not like you've got a defence against it. You need medical teams and someone to find a bomb and defuse it. So these guys standing around, you know, they're kind of observers and, you know, they're sort of ambivalent. They're kind of watching it and taking it in at some level and semi-involved, but... Yeah, you can only assume they're doing a drill or an exercise of some sort, or why are they there? You know, what is their point of view in it? They're not actually police, they're not actually sort of marshalling the event. I mean, you always get stewards with fluorescent tabards and things on, you know, crowd control and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
You know, but if they're not that, they're not police and they're not medical, then they're some sort of security, but they're not really clearly doing that at the level you'd expect.
No, they're incompetent. If anything, they're just, you know, they let it happen, and they let it happen right under their nose. So I mean, that's I guess that's the other theory, is that they knew this was going to go down and they just let it go down, perhaps in order to allow them to experiment with a martial law type scenario. This I guess that's as plausible a theory as any.
See, any one of them may not have known particularly. They're probably just, you know, typical kind of goons they send down and say, well, stand around with gadgets and part of a drill, you just stand there, you know, if we need you for something. I don't suppose they'd be standing nearby if they were worried about their own safety. I mean, seeing these various photographs, I'm not quite sure the geography of all of it, where they were standing, the couple that were photographed in particular, how far away from the actual bang, you know. I don't think anyone would want to stand near there if they knew it was going to go off.
No.
Could work out, perhaps. If someone was near it, they probably didn't know about it at that level anyway.
Yeah, perhaps they thought it was a drill scenario, and they were surprised when it actually went off.
Yeah, that could be. That could be. I think it's definitely a drill or something. Well, they were maybe looking out for things. You think of that film, The Day of the Jackal, or the novel, even better, really. Where they know there's a guy there who's going to kill the president of France, and they don't know where he is, and there's just a policeman with his eyes open walking around, and he's just looks at everything, and all he finds in the end is one window open on a building in an attic at a certain angle, and then he just works out the angle down to the president in the courtyard, goes, right, that's it, I haven't got time to think, I'm going to just rush up the stairs into the attic and find the jackal there, you know.
Yeah.
And it's that kind of thing. They could be like spotters, you know, looking out for things like that. But they don't look... Again, I haven't seen video of them. It's hard to sort of generalise, but they didn't look like they were really doing very much. You know, they didn't look very alert or...
No.
You know what I mean?
Yeah,
they
had to
actively be doing something to do that, you know.
And there was that odd shot. I don't know if you saw the photograph. There was that odd photograph of... It looked like, well, it was definitely someone up there, but there was a lone figure.
Yes, this is well worth bringing up, Patrick. I'm glad you mentioned that. Yes, up on the roof.
Up on the roof, yeah.
Yeah.
And I didn't really think much of it, but then I read a comment somebody made on a forum, and I thought, actually, that guy's got a point, which is that, obviously, if that's an area... Say that's just an onlooker, an innocent onlooker watching the marathon, why wouldn't there be more people up there? Because that would have been a great vantage point. So, in other words, perhaps it was a closed off area. So there is a guy up there, and he's not meant to be up there, or he's up there in some sort of odd official capacity. And then that does then, I don't know, raises slight suspicion, perhaps. The fact you've just got one person.
Maybe he was snooping around to see if there was a device up there, or they had
a
rumour.
I suppose, but I mean... I mean, in America, it's very common for snipers to set up on rooftops, like police snipers, I mean, to overlook these sort of events to make sure there's no, you know, no sort of gunman or anything. But this guy didn't look like he was a sniper or anything, because, I mean, he wasn't holding a weapon. You can tell quite clearly from the silhouette that he's just standing there, a figure, you know.
Was that before or after the explosions, that photograph, do we know?
Not sure.
he could have been reacting to it and getting up to look.
Yeah, man, that's a possibility.
So I think there'll be two teams involved with this. It'd be maybe an A and a B team. Maybe there's sort of a the one you see, which is a general kind of guy standing around mercenaries who are kind of just hired in for some reason, and they don't know really know what's going on, but they may have a sort of a brief to follow that they've got to look out for anything suspicious or something like that. Maybe they're doing that in their own sort of way. And then there's another little team, much smaller, who actually did the actual thing and put it in there. Or maybe it was already put in beforehand, you know, in some way. Not knowing where the bomb actually was, I think it was in a sort of shop window, and I don't know whether it was actually behind the glass. I guess it must have been behind the glass. How long it could have been concealed there. If it couldn't be concealed for very long, it'd have to be put there on the day or before it went off, possibly, you know.
Yeah, I think the official story is that, based on the CCTV footage, they're claiming that the backpackers were... they just placed them down on the street. There's a shot of one of the suspects placing the backpack down right by where the 8-year-old was killed.
Okay.
So, I mean, because that's the first thing I thought as well, was that it looked like the explosion came out of the window. So it had been planted in an actual building, and then the blast radius kind of expanded out into the street. But the official story is that it was the backpack which was just planted down on the ground, and the suspect just casually walks away. And just left.
Yeah, I thought someone would have thought that was suspicious and pointed that out.
Yeah, you would have thought.
You'd do that anyway if you saw something like that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Without hindsight.
And that picture, so just to recap, that picture we're talking about, the shot was taken at the precise moment of the first explosion. So you can actually see the explosion in the photograph.
Okay, well, the one with the man on the roof.
Yeah, yeah.
And he could have been getting up because of the bang.
Yeah.
And then, you know, that could be the case, but he may have been looking around for something or...
It is interesting.
What's that, you know?
It's just an interesting little photo, that one. If nothing else, it's just...
You start looking for things in the background.
Yeah, you do, you do.
Stuff, you know? And,
so it's interesting, actually, because as we're doing this recording, I've just seen on the news, breaking news, that the Canadian authorities have announced that they've managed to prevent a large-scale Al-Qaeda terrorist strike in Toronto. So that's breaking news.
All right.
So I don't really know the details, but they're just saying that there was a cell and they've managed to kind of get in there before they've initiated their plan, whatever that plan may have possibly have been. But that does remind me, interestingly, one of the points about the Boston bombings is that there's a theory that the cell, so the two suspects, who, you know, the one who's now dead and the other one who's in hospital, according to the Mirror, which is like a UK, you know, a tabloid newspaper, it's not of particularly high standard, to be honest, but the FBI, according to the Mirror, the FBI is reportedly hunting a 12-strong terrorist cell that they were linked to. So that they were part of a bigger group. So it's not just two guys who are actually a 12 person cell. So to me, that just sounds like, okay, it may well be true, but if it isn't true, it just sounds like it's the sort of thing they will say now, and then in 6 months' time, when there's a second attack, and, you know, let's hope there isn't, but if there is another bombing of some description that occurs in the US or perhaps anywhere in the world, they can then say, oh, well, it was part of that sleeper cell, part of the same cell.
So it gives them something they can go back to bring out if they need.
Yeah.
You know, they've got this sort of hand up, or not hand up their sleeve, card up their sleeve, as they say. They can bring it out if they need to.
Yeah, that's right.
As they say, you know, relates it back. If you think of it like a story, you plant something earlier on if you want to bring it out later on. So it makes it plausible.
Yeah, it gives them that option.
If you just bring it out of nowhere, it doesn't really make a lot of sense. It's not so plausible. When with this one, they've not been able to pin it on a particular group because they haven't really had any reason for them to have done it. And that is what's a bit strange. You know, no one sort of claimed responsibility.
No.
You just got these two guys, well, as far as I know, have not made any actual statements, have been quoted.
They haven't. I mean, there is an interesting social media aspect to this, which is, and again, it's all speculation and no one really knows for sure if it's real or false or, you know, set up. But the Twitter, so they apparently one of them had a Twitter account, and they were just tweeting just really general stuff right up to the point where the bombing occurred. And it doesn't strike me as the kind of tweets you'd use if you were, you know, seriously politically motivated and looking to kind of do something like this and plan it, and because they must have taken months to plan something like this, you would have thought. And they were just tweeting about cars and making stupid comments and references to movies and things. So that was very strange, I thought. But there is always, there's another side to this, which is that there was an alleged Facebook page up that one of them had, and they were talking about the New World Order and talking about 9/11 being an inside job. But that was then revealed to have been a fake page. So it was just set up by somebody, and it's not a hard thing to do. It's called fake booking, where you just create a fake Facebook page up. It's not a hard thing to do. So
yeah, was it actually on Facebook? Or was it just mocked up in graphics?
It looked like it was on Facebook, but then the actual page was shut down by Facebook. They got rid of the profile very quickly. So they're very fast, you know, at responding to things like this.
So that was just someone putting it on as a...
I think it's most likely, but it's one of those unanswered questions that, you know, it may well be, but there's another side to it, which is that he one of the last things the 19-year-old did before he was arrested by police was tweet, and it sounds bizarre that that's the sort of thing you would do in the middle of a gunfight, and it doesn't really strike me as true, to be honest, but... One bit of information that came out is that there's a rumour that he tweeted to his dad saying that he was going to be framed for something he didn't do.
Yeah. Well, his dad's been saying, you know, that they weren't involved with anything.
Yeah. Yeah, he's saying
maybe
the same thing as the mother.
That message, but probably more generally, you know, generally, I would say. It doesn't seem to have been any, even a dead man's break type thing where they'd both been killed. Message came up on a page somewhere saying, you know, haha, we did it, sort of thing, to fascist America or something. You know, there's no gain from what they've done. If they did it, which I don't think they did, let's say. But if they did, they haven't gained anything, have they? What have they gained? Nothing.
Yeah, that's right.
No organisation has gained. I mean, no one gains by damaging a marathon or hurting anyone at a marathon, but there's been no organisational gain from any type of group.
Yeah, and that's right. And the more you think about that, the more you really do question the whole thing, because it just doesn't seem to make sense. Nothing ties up.
I mean, you say what you like about 9/11, but at least the targets were sort of symbols of power.
Yeah.
Like we were talking the other day, this is just a marathon. Okay, it's in a city that has got a lot of founding fathers type stuff in it, so you could relate it back to America. The Patriots wouldn't want to hit that anyway. They then might say Al Qaeda or somebody, but they haven't jumped on it. And, you know, well, when it's not as well targeted as it might be, they really wanted to do that. And, you know, and they haven't claimed it anyway, and neither has anyone else claimed it for them particularly.
Yeah.
It just seems to be a general kind of, it could be insider terrorists, you know, white terrorists or whatever, or maybe someone from abroad, but it's all a bit vague.
Yeah, it is, and I still think that one of the biggest oddities about the whole story is the way that these alleged suspects, the Tarmalin brothers, if that's their surname, I keep getting the surname wrong, but they don't seem to have really followed it through with any kind of statement or any kind of will of intent or even just a post online perhaps to explain themselves, because they may have known they were going to be caught eventually or something. Just nothing.
I mean, what normally happens, yeah, they go back to their apartment or something and find it booby-trapped.
Yeah, precisely.
Sprayed on the wall, airbrushed on the wall, or sprayed on the wall, some big statement, down with the New World Order or something like that. But again, it doesn't seem to be anything, like a sort of dead man's break, where even if they died, there'd be something left behind to explain why they did it.
Yeah, there's nothing.
There doesn't seem to be anything at all.
And the idea that they went to a one and then went to a party, it's just bizarre.
I mean, there's the other aspect to this, you know, that was said on Alex Jones, the one I listened to.
Yeah.
That someone else said they thought it would happen because that very day Obama was impeached for torture in Guantanamo Bay.
Right.
And this has been, you know, dropped right down the news. Him and Clinton, I think, and George Bush the second, certainly. Not sure about the other George Bush.
It's burying bad news kind of scenario.
Yeah. So really, they should be impeached now.
Yeah.
He should be impeached as the current president. The others should be charged, and that's obviously not happening. So, how you tie that all up to happening on Dad and Marathon in the sense of knowing that would come out that day in order to do that is again another one of these stretches that can seem a bit hard to think could actually be done in practical terms, but certainly it did have the effect of covering it up.
Yeah, it is, and then. There's the other side to this, which I saw it myself, but not quite in the UK. It wasn't really quite to the extent of the, apparently in the US. A few hours after the bombings, numerous outlets were suggesting straight away that it was right wing extremists. So, sort of the patriotic, sort of constitutional types in the US who are perhaps NRA. Pro-gun, and that's their right to be, you know, to be NRA pro-gun. It's not to say it's right or wrong, but it's just that's what they are.
Did they actually say that though, or do they say just theorise that it could be a patriot group? I didn't hear anyone actually pin it on anyone.
Well, I didn't myself, no, but there was a CNN analyst, apparently he was on air, and he was given airtime by the CNN, and he came out and said, "Oh, this looks like the work of a white right wing extremist." I think, and then the anchorman didn't exactly give him a hard time, put it that way.
Yeah, and they're sort of trying to conjure up a Timothy McVeigh figure there, aren't they?
Yeah.
And presumably, I mean, he probably didn't do Oklahoma bombing anyway, but they're trying to conjure that up. But again, even there, you know, he hit FBI HQ or building. Again, why blow up a marathon? It doesn't make any sense. The target, apart from maybe at best you've got a city that's got patriot type stuff in it, founding fathers type stuff. It wasn't that they hit, apart from JFK building, which is in dispute anyway. It was just more of a general terror attack. That's why I think it reminds me far more of 7/7, which was a tube attack, yeah, public transport style attack.
Yeah, sure.
Far more like that sort of attack.
Definitely, yeah.
It was a marathon, it's fairly irrelevant, it was a crowd.
Yeah, it seems to be the same playbook, same sort of MO involved at 7/7. If it's a false flag, I mean, we have to be analytical about this, and it's just, without having an opinion either way, the official story doesn't make any sense. There's too many unanswered questions, so looking at other possibilities to say that this may well have been a false flag, absolutely, it seems to link with 7/7, and all the same signs seem, you know, are there, i.e. things like the drill, that's the key one, because obviously the 7/7, the famous Peter Powers interview where he said on ITN that there were drills going on at the exact same times at the exact same stations in London.
Yeah.
And even to this day, that just sends a chill up my spine, the fact that he said that on air, and it was never really followed through by anybody, well, apart from conspiracy theorists or researchers, but the mainstream media just didn't touch it. It's just, you know, it rocked the apple cart, really, pretty much. But I guess the Saudi connection is quite interesting, and this is a bit of information that's starting to seep through today, and in it, there's a guy called Glenn Beck who's a bit of a character in the US, and he's very well known to Alex Jones, and probably to many people out there listening to our podcast.
Oh, yes,
I would have imagined.
He's had a go at Alex Jones, hasn't he?
He has on numerous occasions, yeah. But with this particular story, I get this sense that he's probably just looking to gain a bit of attention and create a bit of hype about some channel of his. You know, I don't know, but he on the weekend he put a YouTube video up that had 300,000 views, so it had quite a lot of attention. And he said that something, he was going to reveal something on Monday, and that's the day we're doing this episode, for those that listen to it at a later date. He said that he was going to reveal some information. Nothing's really come out yet. 22nd of April, yeah.
We're saying this.
So he claims that it was all a bit of hype, but I think the gist of it is what he's saying is that pretty much the authorities have had to admit in the US that the Saudi connection to this is probably a connection somewhere. That there was a suspect who looked like he was possibly involved in some capacity with the events that panned out at the marathon. He was arrested, then subsequently released. It turns out that he's got a history of mixing with terrorist groups, etc. And he should have been deported, but he never was. And it turns out that he's got ties with a very powerful Saudi family. So that's an interesting angle on this. But I don't think there's much detail there beyond that at this stage. But I just think it's worth raising and mentioning as part of our analysis here.
Yeah, there'll always be all sorts of threads.
Yeah, yeah, that's right.
Can't always be sure.
And I think it kind of makes you wonder if they're going to use that at a later date as some sort of cards. But I just don't know. I mean, the Saudi connection was there during 9/11 as well. So that there's some interesting information there, but it's not really kind of established yet if it's significant or not, I think. So, yeah, I mean, I guess that's all the bases covered, really. I just think a general comment, really, is just that this was a fascinating week of news, and I don't think since 7/7, I guess, so 2005, I don't think since then has there been a story like this in the media, and it's been quite as dramatic, and the way it's unfolded like a thread, kind of like a cinematic screenplay sort of events, right down to the last stand gunfight on the boat. Well, if it was a gunfight, like we said earlier, doesn't look like it was a gunfight to me. It looks like it was a one-way affair. In other words, the police were firing, and doesn't look like the suspects even had guns from what I can tell, but who knows. But it's gone from that to this story now about the guy who's lying in a hospital bed. He can't even speak because he shot himself in the throat, allegedly. So That the whole spin on that, and the fact he may never be interviewed and all this. It's just like a cinema. It's just like cinematic, sort of like a film, That's what it feels like to me.
But, well, you can bet they'll be making a drama out of it.
Yeah.
At some point.
Yeah, no doubt.
HBO or something like that.
I'm sure they will.
And the truth gets confused with the drama then.
Yeah, that's right.
There may be one brave policeman's involvement in the day or something like that.
Yeah.
Pulling it through somebody's point of view, or you can see what a screenwriter would do. They would take all this and find an angle on it,
Yeah.
Which may or may not be right, but it begins to replace the event in reality a little bit, tidies it all up. When you reenact it for the cinema, you make it look very realistic, and you tend to believe that's actually what happened when you make a drama film. And of course, any drama film is always a recreation of events, as well as they can be recreated, which is not always that closely.
No, sure.
Sort of approximation of what actually happened at any event. So many things in history, we only think we know what it looks like. Is it exactly what it did look like? Even if you think of films in the 30s or Victorian era or something like that. You never could be quite sure that's exactly what it would have been like. It's sort of like what it would have been. But so if they recreate this, they'll have their own way of doing it. You can think of many ways they would do the bit with the boat at the end. I think he was under a tarpaulin or something. I haven't seen photos of it myself.
Yeah.
But, you can have him under there and texting Russia for one last time before the last stand and the music building up.
Yeah.
Someone just sees it by chance and goes, gosh, look at that sort of thing, and snipers turn up with some music and freeze frame at the end or whatever. You can just build it up. And same with all these other incidents in the day. I can imagine they can make a film called Lockdown or something like that. We don't see the bombing that happens at the start, and then it's sort of like everything afterwards, and then they recreate the whole thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
Different fictional households being searched. And
yeah, they've got it all.
You could do it all, and you could make a myth out of it, you see.
You could.
that'll be next year's Olympus Has Fallen type movie, you know.
I'm sure that there will be something like that. It may be, if not a film, then an HBO TV one-off show, yeah, perhaps, like you say, something along those lines. I mean, they did that, yeah, for the 2008 banking crisis. I think they called it Too Big to Fail. And they always do. So we'll see. I mean, I'm sure something like that will eventually hit.
And while I don't mind it in a way, I don't mind them making a drama, but if they start to use that, then there's a jingoistic replacement for really finding out, you know, the truth.
Yeah.
Or if they're just using it to manufacture a truth, then it starts to become very iffy, you know.
Yeah.
It depends who made the film and what the motives are, and doesn't mean to say you'd get it right even if you had good motives, because you may not know what really happened. But it'd be quite easy to make something that looks tangibly real, that has a certain, you know, let's say a kind of the authorities are all right and it was a genuine terrorist attack and we got them in the end, guys, sort of thing. You could definitely make something quite subtle that would still put that over, and you might not know it's propaganda.
Yeah, sure.
You know? And I could see that happening, even unwittingly. But certainly those who fund it maybe know it's a bit less innocent, maybe, than those who actually make it and act in it. Sometimes it's often very much the case with films like that. And, of course, it depends now if anything else does happen in the summer later on, or if this is like this team that, in theory, of the ones who got away sort of thing. They can,
yeah,
build that up as an idea, and then,
yeah, that's right.
Bring it out if it's a false flag, of course.
This could be the start of a series of false flags, or a series of real terrorist attacks, or, you know, either from either perspective you may have. But
yes, which could then be used to bring in the agenda more.
Yeah, but I'm just seeing here on the news, there's a bit more information about this Canada revelation, if you like, that there was a plot to bomb a train between Toronto and New York, a passenger train, and that's the detail that's just come through there about that. So it's an Al-Qaeda plot, and they've used that term, Al-Qaeda plot. So yeah, very interesting. So we may well be seeing here the beginning of a year of all sorts of terrorist events, and let's hope that isn't the case, but it does seem to be ramping up a little bit, this. And I mean, there were all sorts of reports as well in the news of, I mean, it didn't really break in the UK, but I just based on what I saw on a forum I frequent, there was talk in the US of an attack on a nuclear power station yesterday that turned out to be nothing. It turned out to just be a guard who ended up firing his weapon by mistake, which sounded like a bit of a screw up. But he was a security guard in a nuclear power station, and he fired either one or two shots by mistake, and that caused a very swift police response. But it turned out to be nothing.
Right.
So there's obviously a lot of tension in the US right now, I think, and I think it could be the authorities say let's. Suggest for a moment that if this was a false flag, I think it looks like the authorities got what they want out of it, which is that they've basically been able to create a foundation, if you like, and create a new fantasy, a new fiction, which is this idea that there's this cell out there, and, you know, there's this perhaps a 12-man or perhaps even bigger cell, and they're at large.
Yeah, because unlike with 9/11, I mean, there were supposedly no survivors from that.
No.
Due to the way it was done, obviously.
Yeah.
If it was done like that, but anyway, if it was, all the guys in the planes died, you know.
Yeah.
But with this, you know, it's much more a group that maybe were going to plant more bombs, and they all got away. So you could always, like I said, bring them out when you need them.
Yeah.
And either way, you know, like that thing you just said about the train, whatever the truth or otherwise behind that, was probably a true thing, but it may not be anything much, or it may be something substantial. But once you've heard a couple of bangers go off, you know it can happen. So any story has a lot more credibility, certainly. So
yeah,
they almost don't need to do anything more. As long as they've done this, probably sounds a horrible thing to say, but 9/11 was getting a bit worn down and forgotten. You know,
yeah,
once the 10th anniversary came and they put the monuments there and everything, it sort of, to to be honest, you know, things have moved on a lot, and it's a long time ago now. It's over 10 years ago now, and that's a tenth of a century. I mean, you know, that's twice the length of World War II. You know, you can't really sustain something on that. Not to belittle anything that happened on the day to anyone, and that still seemed like yesterday to someone who was involved with that. But in the end of the day, for the general public, who just see it as news, you know, it's a long time ago.
Yeah.
And someone who was 10 at the time is now maybe 20, 21, you know, but they wouldn't really remember it, except they might not even remember it at all.
That's right.
You know, so you have to kind of bring in another one every 10, 15 years maybe to kind of revamp it.
Yeah, know? I agree, and that might be what this is. It's just a way of just reiterating that the war on terror is still happening, and it's still... they still need to take away more rights and, you know, in the guise of security kind of thing. Yeah. So I guess that wraps up then. I mean, it's like I say, been a very interesting week, and we felt the need to kind of keep on track of this and provide our thoughts, because it's significant, and it's no doubt going to be an historical week, you know, significantly sort of historical week, I think, for various reasons, and we may find more information out at a later date. I'm sure we will. I mean, obviously, one of the suspects is still alive. Obviously, he can't speak, and that, you know, that you couldn't make it up, really, could you? The fact he can't actually speak, but he is alive and he is responding. So more information may be revealed soon. It'd be interesting to see what happens. So I think we'll wrap it up. So yeah, thanks for that, Peter.
Okay.
And yeah, stay tuned for more episodes.
The information where unknown forces strike the edge of ecology.